Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and it's another a beautiful day somewhere in the world, just not here. I'm Al Warren, and of course Eric Shapiro, the doctor, is on the show. Hey!
Good to be with you. How you doing?
That's good. Now, listen, I've been watching a lot on TV, and I see that you... So what's this? You've got Jewish laser beams, and you've been starting the fires in California?
Oh, yeah, that's me. Yeah, that's right. All the conspiracy theories, I would bank on them 100%. Yeah, always, if you're looking for a scapegoat, you know, don't hesitate.
Well, I was just wondering, how you got away with it for so long?
Right. Well, no, I think it's good for you to call me out because it's, you know, well, yeah. You've dealt with serial killers before, so now it's a relief to me that I don't have to ever do it again.
Yeah.
This I was actually going to do it tonight, yeah.
This is like Jew Hunter.
Man, yeah, the worst part of it was, with these recent ones, the new normal to say was, there is no fire season anymore in California. Fire season's now year round, so it's especially me having two little kids. That was very unnerving. We're actually thinking of getting out of here.
Well, why are you causing so many fires with your laser beam?
Yeah,
like what's the deal?
I've co-hosted now like 10 times, and this is the sort of content I signed on for. The paranoia. I was like, when is he going to go full blown tinfoil on his head with me?
Well,
if I ever had. You know, the whole concept of Jewish laser beams is a contradiction in terms. Because for me, anyway, I'm so clumsy. If I had a laser beam, I would kill myself immediately.
Well, yeah.
By accident. Yeah.
Well, I can't believe that's in the government.
Yeah. Yeah, especially with the...
right?
Especially with the Biden administration. Yeah, we'd think things would normalize somewhat.
Yeah, she actually gets voted in, and she's thinking, I mean, holy cow. That's like really bad movies.
Yeah. No, it's insane out here. You're safer up there.
Oh yeah. No, I'm not going anywhere. No.
Yeah.
No. We have fires too, but it's not the Jewish laser beams up here. It's French. French Canadian.
Canadians have fires in the fireplace.
Yeah. Yeah,
we have 100,000 acres burning down.
Yeah. No. No. It's the same thing up here. We have the same burning.
You get hit with that stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Just as bad. Just.
We don't. Yeah, we're Americans are so narcissistic and self-absorbed that news never reaches us. We just presume what's happening right here is what's happening.
It's all about you.
Yeah, it's all about us.
Well, anyway, speaking of that, speaking of Jewish laser beams and fires, we've got. I guess you'd call him a horror author, and not whoer, horror.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Mark Allen Gunnels is on the line. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Wow. Let's see if you say that at the end of the show.
Yeah.
you've got a new book out now. So you want to scare people even more. The book is called To Be, and that's an address, by the way. When your ex wants you dead, they will take you to the grave with them. Okay. Okay then. So very cheery title. What made you come up with this book?
I got the idea for this book like 20 years ago, and it took me 2 decades to write it. In my younger years, I lived in many a small crappy apartment, and really the genesis of the idea came from coming home late one night after dark, and the light in the little breezeway of the apartment complex was flickering and buzzing, and it seemed like such a quintessential horror thing that I thought, no, but it's always houses that are haunted. They're never apartments that are haunted. So I got this idea for a haunted apartment novel.
Oh,
nice. Yeah.
So did you, were you just breaking up with an ex at the time too? Or?
Well, in my past, I have had some pretty horrific exes. So let's just say I drew from some of that experience when I was formulating the story idea.
So you had, did you have exes that stalked you?
I wouldn't say stalked, but I had some exes that it was hard to get rid of.
Oh, I see.
Not as hard as the one in the book.
Okay.
But there were some people who just didn't want to go.
Wow. So what's the concept of the book is really about? Is it kind of like a stalker book, or is it even, is there another angle to it?
Well, I mean, when the story starts, the stalker ex-boyfriend is dead.
Mm-hmm.
But the main character starts to think that death was not enough to stop him from stalking. So it's full of, you know, ghost story haunting goodness with that sort of relationship drama thrown into it as well.
Wow. So you got a lot of paranormal in this.
Yeah, I love ghost stories and I love stories of haunting, so I threw a bunch of the stuff I love about that into the mix while, you know, trying to make it my own at the same time.
Are you a believer in the paranormal, or are you more agnostic or skeptical?
I'm a bit of a Scully, which I know a lot of young people might not get that X-Files reference, but I'm a little on the skeptical side, but I'm an open-minded skeptic. I'm fascinated by those stories, and I love to, and I've met people who say they've had real experiences, and I can find their stories compelling, but not having experienced anything myself, I can't really say I believe, but
yeah, that's
so
fair.
Yeah,
enough.
I'm a little skeptical, but I am fascinated.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, it's funny because I some people too young to know Scully. I'm too old.
Yeah, I'm technically the correct demographic, but I never was into the show. But I knew what you meant when you said it.
Yeah. I know from reruns. Okay, how's that?
Yeah.
The old. Well, that's
of the perfect age to remember when that was like a cultural phenomenon going on.
Yeah, it was like the early 90s, right?
Yeah.
I was busy hanging out with Courtney Love.
Yeah.
In Seattle, you know, everyone was doing heroin, you know.
It's hard to remember anything after that.
Well, so this is pretty interesting. So now you, so where do you get your paranormal stories from? Like, where do you draw from?
Well, I mean, some of it is just the long tradition of ghost stories. I sort of pick what I like from those stories, discard what doesn't work for me. I also happen to know some folks. I'm good friends with a guy who does paranormal investigations in Savannah, Georgia, has his own company, does ghost tours. He's written several books about the investigations his team have done. And he tells me a lot of stories about, you know, things that he's experienced. And I sort of used him as some research. And you know, I'm fascinated by these stories, so I do like to meet people and talk to them, people who say they've had these things happen to them. And like I draw from all that, and then I also just make some of it up. And in this story in particular, like, I made some of my own rules about how ghosts and hauntings work. Because, you know, that's the good thing about being a writer. Like, you can just be the god, and in this fictional world, this is how it works.
Mm. Pretty interesting. So now, does your, with your books, do you get into the psychological horror, or is it a little bit more graphic and a little bit more slash?
It really depends on the book. I mean, I've written books that are specifically meant to be like homages to the slasher films I grew up on in the 80s. And those tend to be a little bit more gory and violent. Particularly with my ghost story stuff, I like to be a little more on the atmospheric and the psychological side. And with 2B, not to make it sound like more than it is, because it is just a fun ghost story, but in some ways I'm also talking about, you know, trauma and how we deal with trauma and how people react to people who've gone through trauma. So I feel like I really got more into the psychological aspect in this one.
Hmm. Well, where do you draw from? Like, what kind of horror do you consider good? Like, that you really get into? Like, is it kind of an Alfred Hitchcock style, or do you, maybe talk to that?
Well, I've often said probably my greatest influence as a storyteller is the original Twilight Zone. I grew up in a time when those reruns were all over TV, and then they did the 80s revival incarnation, which I also watched a lot of, but in a lot of ways, that informed my idea of horror. I particularly enjoyed, I mean, it wasn't like some gothic castle usually, or some, you know, setting I couldn't relate to. It was a world I recognized, but things were just slightly off kilter. And I, that's what I like. And I, as I got older, I got into the works of Stephen King, and I felt like that was what he did. He introduced a world that was familiar to me. It was like my street. It was like my town. But then you just insert that one element that's a little off, and that's where the horror comes from, the invading of the world you know with this otherworldly presence.
So, sort of sounds like 2020, but, geez.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you're talking about the year. You're not talking about the show with Barbara Walters and John Stossel. That's where my mind went. Yeah.
Barbara Walba.
Well, so, Mark, do you like... what is the main emotion you go after with your horror? I know you said you've done different kinds, but is it more suspense-oriented? Is it more about, like, you said you love ghost stories, so is it more about being chilling and under the skin?
I feel like I probably more often do go for the more subtle horror. I feel like that saying that some people, you know, that's not what they're really into, but I like the horror that kind of creeps up on you, that's a little more insidious, not necessarily so in your face, but the kind that kind of gets under your skin and keeps you thinking about it after you've closed the book. Yeah. I like to sort of sneak up on the reader.
How long is this book? How many words is it, the new one?
Now, 2B is pretty short. It's around between 35 and 40.
Okay, so do you consider it a novella, or is it creeps right up on the length of a short novel?
It's it's right on that cusp. It's probably really more of a novella, but I've noticed some publishers don't like that word. So
yeah, that's a tricky one. Yeah, because I think the buyer wants to feel like they're getting more value.
So it's being marketed as a short novel because it is sort of right on that cusp of being too long to be considered a novella, but it's also the length the publisher was looking for. It's a new publisher. He wanted to start out with some stuff that was a little shorter, you know, just some quick reads for people to get familiar with his brand.
What's the name of the publisher?
It's Valhalla Books.
Oh, okay.
And this is their first. They published an anthology last year, and this is their first single author book that they've published.
Oh, that's really cool. That's an honor.
I was pretty thrilled when I was in that anthology, and then he came to me and asked me if I had any ideas for a short novel, and I pitched him a few ideas. This actually was not the one he responded to the most strongly, but like I said, it's an idea I've had for so long. Just bringing it up kind of made me think, like, maybe now's the time. So I wrote it in about 2 months for him, and we were off and running.
Oh, wow. So it could be the house that Gunnel's built. It could be like he's betting on your talent, which is really nice.
So hopefully it won't be the house that Mark demolished. So,
yeah, yeah. Well, don't you just take all the credit and none of the blame.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you do this, like, so how did you find your characters? So you got, what is it? It's Berkeley woke up to find himself in the hospital, and he discovered his ex was dead after a failed murder-suicide attempt. So that's a pretty intense thing. So you got a couple where you're saying that the one tried to kill the spouse and then himself or herself. Where does that come from for you personally?
I always had the general idea, but the characters themselves really developed as I started writing. I don't know, it's this weird thing that I don't know how to explain, but sometimes when I start writing, I know some general information about a character, but it's really when I get them moving and start putting them in situations that I sort of discover their personalities, which helps inform the rest of the book, because when I really get a firm grip on their personalities, and it's like, okay, so they're not going to do this at this point, so the story needs to take a different direction. But these characters in particular, I had a lot of fun with just discovering them as I wrote them. There was one character named Zane that I didn't even expect to be in the book much, but really took on a much more prominent role. And I don't know, that's part of the fun for me, is really digging in. And I don't do like a lot of detailed character outlines before I start. Like I said, I get a general idea, a premise, I start, and that's when it all starts to happen in the writing itself.
Wow. But that does cover a lot of emotion when you're talking murder-suicide, right?
Yeah. And it did, I mean, I think the reason I didn't write it 20 years ago is I don't think I was ready or equipped to really work with those intense emotions yet. Because, you know, obviously when you start off with something like that, it ends up going in a very dark direction. And, I mean, the weird thing is, as dark as it was, I still was having a lot of fun. But those are very intense emotions, and I feel like I had to be a little more mature, if you could call me mature, to really deal with them in an effective way.
Yeah, I think you have to be of a certain age to understand it more. So that's pretty intense of a subject. So is that kind of an underlying theme or important after someone reads the book? Are they going to walk away thinking about that?
Well, I hope so, because like I said, I felt like
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
In some ways, I was sort of talking almost in a metaphorical way just about trauma that people experience in their lives and how we deal with it, how we try to get over it. And particularly, I feel like when you've suffered something, some great tragedy in your life, sometimes the people around you get a little tired of it. Almost like they're just ready for you to get over it and get back to being who you were before the event. Mm-hmm. And which can actually make it even harder for you to really deal with it. So I want the reader to somewhere in the back of their mind, you know, be left thinking about that.
Yeah, I think there's a certain point when with something like that, it's going to change that person, period. So the survivor of something like that, like in this case, Berkeley, he'll never go back to normal. You know, I think they have to realize that it's changed. That old person is gone, really.
Yeah, exactly. And even when I delivered the manuscript to the publisher, some of his early notes, he was commenting on, you know, some of Berkeley's behavior isn't always that likable. And I'm like, well, you have to put yourself in his shoes and what he's been through. He's dealing with a lot. He's not always going to act the way people want him to act. I don't think that makes him unsympathetic. I think you can still empathize with him. But, you know, you're not going to go through something like that and then just go back to everyday life like nothing happened.
No, not unless you were the one doing it. So if you had more of a... Do you think you'll ever go back to this kind of this story or this kind of story when you have a fuller book to write, like more where you're not limited?
Well, in some ways I don't, because I always feel like every story is as long as it needs to be. I always knew this story was going to be more novellish length, so I don't feel like I cheated anything out of it. I feel like it it had everything in it it needed to have. But that being said, I do still, like, I have another version of a haunted house story in my head that I want to write that I think I would call imposter syndrome. And it would be a bigger story, and it wouldn't deal exactly with the same types of issues as 2B, but it would deal with some, I want to deal with insecurity and not feeling good enough, and, you know, the doubts that a lot of us feel when we're pursuing our dream. And I do think that will be a larger canvas when I get around to writing that one. Hopefully it won't be 20 years like this.
Yeah, because then you'd be old like me. No, I think that, and I didn't mean cheat. I just meant that, because sometimes when you write something like this, you know, you're doing a certain size book and you're writing a story, but sometimes, as you say, as the characters develop, you get more into the story, more in depth into what they are doing and how they act and react to the situation and to each other. So sometimes you learn new emotions or new ideas from that. And it's just, I meant more develop it, go even further.
Yeah. And like, I definitely want to continue with some of these ideas. I have other stories I want to write first, but that other idea is definitely in my head as something I want to get to. Of course, it's jostling for position with a ton of other ideas I want to get to. And that's my biggest problem, is figuring out, like, which one is screaming at me the loudest to be written.
When you say this one to be took 20 years, so that's obviously from inception to completion. Throughout that time, were there different points where, like, certain forms of awareness would come to you about it or what it wanted to be, and, oh, we could go in this direction? Or was it more that the kernel of the idea had been there for a couple decades, and when you had an opportunity to execute with this publisher, you were able to jump on it?
When I first got the idea 20 years ago, it was fairly fully formed. Like, I definitely knew the beginning and I definitely knew the ending, because the ending really was the driving force of the idea. Mm-hmm. Some of the middle stuff was kind of vague, but I felt like I pretty much had it, but for whatever reason, I didn't feel ready to tell it. And then about 10 years ago, I did make an attempt. I did about a chapter and a half, and I just was not happy with it. I loved the idea so much, and I'm like, I'm not doing it justice. So, and when I finally did write it, I didn't use any of that stuff that I had written, but I don't know. It's almost like the time was right. When I mentioned the idea to him, it all kind of came flooding back to me, and I got excited. And I will say there were aspects of it when I was writing that I didn't envision when I first had the idea, and that was more in that middle part that was always kind of vague to me. But I stayed pretty true to that original idea I had 20 years ago. I just feel like I had to mentally be ready to tell that story. And it that's just how long it took.
Everything requires the right timing.
So has this got a happy ending to it?
Well, I can't tell you anything, but I always say a happy ending depends on whose point of view you're looking at it from.
Well, okay.
The most tragic ending might be a happy ending to somebody in the story.
I'm getting an ominous feeling thinking about that.
Yeah.
We have to read it and find out.
Well, does he get to have sex with a ghost?
Al, you took the words right out of my mouth.
Well, no, I was just thinking about that lady that married a ghost, and then now she's divorcing the ghost because they just don't get along in England. You know, it's a true story. I'm not...
I wonder if it's easier or harder to divorce a ghost. I mean, they've already proven they're going to stick around.
Right.
So, in essence, you're in this story, you're really kind of saying that this this desire, this need to stalk someone or to hold on to, you know, like no one else is going to love you, so they'll kill you so no one else can have you. That kind of thing is going on. It's reaching out the emotion strong enough to keep this person after death to hold on to this other person.
Well, I mean, and I feel like when you've been in relationships like that, where it's almost like you just can't, like you feel like you're entangled with someone and you can't get untangled. I think it feels like that. You feel like, you know, I can't get away from this person, and no matter what, even death might not be able to stop them. But, you know, I also think the story, you know, is going to provide some surprises and some unexpected turns for people, because it's not always, just like with relationships and love, it's not always what it seems. So I think there's some surprises in there for readers as well.
Nice.
So you never had, you shot this out in a couple of months. So you must have done this just in the last year, in 2020. So 2020 didn't bother you, or it didn't affect the way you were writing, or it didn't change anything for you?
In a weird way, it helped my writing, because in the early spring of last year, I got furloughed from work for a couple of months, and I was full of anxiety like the rest of the world, and I thought, I've got to do something so it doesn't drive me crazy. So while I'm furloughed from work, I'm just going to pretend I'm a full-time writer. I'm going to act like that is my job. I'm going to write every day. I'm going to write as much as I can. And in that two-month period, I wrote a novella that I sold to a publisher that'll be out next year. But when I did go back to my day job, I carried that momentum with me, so that, you know, every morning I get up, I come in here, I write, and I've been very productive ever since that. You know, I was somewhat productive before that, but some days I would half-ass it, some days I would skip it. But since I got furloughed from work, I have been very consistent in my commitment to writing every day and treating it like, you know, even now that I'm back at work, I'm still treating it like I'm a full-time writer. So it's actually really helped my input, my output.
So we need another virus to make
pandemic. Yeah.
I wouldn't wish that on the world, but, you know, like I said, for me, it was just trying to keep myself from getting so full of anxiety that I just drove myself crazy. I needed that outlet to sort of pour my anxiety into. So in that way, it was sort of therapeutic for me.
And that was sort of help in writing this type of subject, do you think? Like when you have that much anxiety and you got all the stress going on around you and you're worried about stuff, it must go into your writing then with this subject.
It was somewhat cathartic in a weird way. Like I could channel, you know, whatever negative dark emotions I had into the story, and it didn't like completely alleviate them, but it gave it an outlet that helped, you know, lessen it, so that I wasn't so anxiety ridden, especially like I said, during those months when I was out of work and wasn't sure when I would be going back.
Yeah, that's crazy. So what do you got planned next? What are you going to be working on now? Or are you taking time off from it?
I never take time off of it, I guess, because to me it doesn't feel like something I need to take time off of. But I do have, later this year, I'll have another book with Crystal Lake Publishing, a suspense novel called Before He Wakes. And I'm currently finishing a new novel, which is one of the rare non-horror novels that I write. I got inspired when I did 2B, because I had that idea for so long. There was a novel idea that had been rattling around in my head since I was in college that I decided I was finally going to write. I call it my more explicitly LGBT take on Rebel Without a Cause.
So it's more literary.
Well, I hope my horror is as literary as the other stuff, but...
I'm saying, in terms of, not in terms of quality, in terms of genre classification.
Yeah, it's definitely sort of... It's weird that I think of it as non-genre, although nothing is without a genre, but it's not like horror or suspense, or although there are some suspenseful moments, but it is more of a, like a drama story. And I do those on occasion, and like I said, this one, I just thought, you know, why don't I finally get to that? It was an idea I'd had so long that I never thought I would really write it, and actually wrote it into one of my novels as a movie someone was making. So anybody who read that book might recognize it as a movie in there.
Oh, nice. It sounds like you're pretty productive. I mean, it sounds like, listening to you talk about your projects, that there is an element of you have good discipline when it comes to sitting down and getting it done. Like, you're not, I know you said that To Be took 20 years all in all, but it sounds like you're one of those writers who has the confidence to have a few things going on at once or juggling different ideas, and then you know if you commit yourself to it, you'll get to the end.
Yeah, and, you know, somebody actually at work today was just mentioning, you know, the different projects I have finished since I've been there, but I'm like, you know, I just do it every day. I get up, I do the work, and it's fun for me. Like, I look forward to, like, getting in here to the keyboard and seeing what happens next, so...
Yeah.
I feel like I get to the end because I'm just dying to get there. I'm just...
Oh, that's good.
In a way, so I'm telling myself the story.
Yeah, and that usually I've found with the process that helps it to be more suspenseful on the other end. Because if you're feeling that, there's going to be a contact high for the reader that, you know, you've wired it together in this way with anticipation.
Yeah, that's my hope, because I feel as a reader, I can tell when a writer was really excited about the story, and it's somewhat infectious to me as the reader. Like, I'm infected by the excitement the writer had for the story.
Right, right. What is your daily discipline? Do you have a daily word target you try and stick to?
I don't usually do word counts or page numbers, just because I'm the kind of person that if I put too much pressure on myself, it cripples me in a way.
Okay, yeah.
Like, my discipline is I'm going to get up in the morning and I'm going to come in here and write. Some days it may be several pages. Some days it may be a page. I'm
what
not
about
beat myself up about that.
What about in terms of the time? Are you generally in there for the same amount of time each day, regardless of page output, or does that vary too?
Typically, I'm in here for the same amount of time. Sometimes with the day job, because I work in a bookstore at a local university.
Okay.
So, like, when the new semester starts, my hours increase. So then I usually have less time. Typically, I have a good two-hour chunk that I can sit in here. During those new semesters, I might just have half an hour to 45 minutes. But typically, I have the same 2 hours every morning that I can sit in here and work.
Oh, that's great. Okay. And do you feel during that period, I'm going to guess the answer is yes, but I want to hear your answer, because you said you have this excitement and anticipation to see where the story's going, and there's the joy of creation, I want to get back to it and, you know, go back into that world. Do you feel emotional when you're doing the writing? Are you communicating in a way that's primarily emotional through your work?
Yeah, I really think I am, because it is all caught up in my emotions, and I can usually tell if the story is going off the rails if I'm not feeling that emotion.
Yeah, you start becoming too cerebral.
If I'm not feeling what I hope the reader is going to feel, then I'm like, okay, something's wrong. I need to rework this. I need to just go back, get out of my own head, and try to get back in touch with the emotional aspect of the scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Pretty interesting process. Okay, now, so you have a website, right? Or
I have a blog, markgunnels.livejournal.com. I didn't used to update it that much, but I'm much better at it now. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all that stuff we writers have to do now to promote ourselves. I've resisted the TikTok because it just seems like a lot of young people dancing lackadaisically.
Yeah. Eric does that all the time. Tough to get him.
Yeah, I can't get him. That's all I can think about.
Well, it's been pretty, it's a good conversation as always. Glad you came in, told us about your new book or new novella coming out. It's called 2B. Our guest has been Mark Allen Dennells. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you for having me and letting me babble.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.